Welcome to DS Smith Pre-Close Statement Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we shall conduct a question and answer session. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the call over to your host, Miles Roberts. Sir, you may begin. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody, and thank you for joining us today to talk about our pre-close statement for the 6 months to the end of October. I'm Miles Roberts, the CEO of DS Smith, and I'm joined by Steve Dryden, our Finance Director. So this morning we released our pre-close trading statement, and I'd like to start by taking a few minutes to run through some of the highlights, after which Steve and myself will be delighted to take questions. Before getting into some of the detail, though, I'd like to start saying that we are pleased with the momentum and progress of the business through the first 6 months of the year. We are delivering on our strategic and financial targets with a strong contribution from Autor, the French packaging business that we acquired last year, and this means that we expect the half year to show significant EPS growth compared to the comparable period last year. And I would also like to flag that we have successfully completed a refinancing of our revolving credit facility with a new 5-year £610 million facility. So in terms of trading and looking at the group as a whole, well, the encouraging trading that we reported in September's IMS has continued. Like-for-like volumes in corrugated packaging are up 3% year-to-date against strong comparators last year, and that momentum's continued right to the end of the current period. This performance primarily reflects the resilience of our FMCG, the fast-moving consumer goods customer base that we've been focusing on. While everyone knows about the challenging economic situation, the fact remains that people continue to eat and drink and consume those FMCG products, and that's good news for DS Smith. And as well as seeing good like-for-like volume growth, we continue to make progress on margins, return on capital, and strong cash flows. So now briefly running through some of the highlights of the packaging business. Well, we continue to make excellent progress with regard to executing our strategy for this division. The focus on providing customers with high levels of service and quality and offering new innovative packaging solutions which add value to their business has allowed us to improve our margins. We're on track with our efficiency initiatives, with the initiative to reduce procurement costs. We'll now deliver £9 million this financial year, split between OPEX and CAPEX, and that's an improvement of the target of £6 million, which we've recently given. And as part of our strategy to reduce paper manufacturing, we sold the Higher Kings Mill, which produced 34,000 tonnes per annum. The process to close our Hollins paper mill, which produces 95,000 per annum, remains fully on track. And with regard to Spicers, our office product wholesaling business, well, trading's been good there, and the £200 million disposal remains fully on track to be completed by the end of the calendar year. So the remaining business is now focused, following its disposal, the remaining business is now focused on packaging, and we have the financial strength to invest in the business both organically and by acquisition. And on the subject of M&A, it is worth reminding everyone that we will only proceed if we expect the acquisition to result in returns to shareholders which are fully in line with our medium-term financial targets that we have outlined, and that's exactly what we've done with O'Toole. And finally, with regard to outlook, well, DS Smith continues to get stronger as a business as we focus on our FMCG customers, reduce our exposure to paper, and instead have long positions in recycled packaging and the collection of fibre. And we expect to continue to make progress with regard to margin improvement, return on capital and cash generation. And while taking into account the challenging macroeconomic environment, the board remains confident in the trading outlook for the year. Thank you. Steve and I are now very happy to take any questions that you may have.
Thank you. We shall now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star then one on your touchtone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the hash key or the pound sign. Once again, if you have a question, please press star then one on your touchtone phone. Please hold while we queue for questions. Thank you. Ross Gallardi from Merrill Lynch is now online with a question.
Good morning. Thanks, gentlemen. I just had a few questions. First of all, can you comment at all on the trends in your continental European margins year-on-year, excluding O'Toole? In other words, are the margins in your underlying, your legacy business also going up?
They are. It does. Good morning, Ross. It gets a little bit blurred in France because we've really integrated the original business with the O'Toole acquisition. But everything shows us that those businesses continue to make good margin progression, particularly as in France they benefit from some of the synergies with O'Toole. Plus everybody is benefiting from the better procurement. Obviously there's an operational gearing effect as well as the packaging volumes come through. So in terms of the legacy business, that does continue to improve.
Thanks, Miles. And just in terms of the downdraft we've seen in containerboard prices, would you expect that to give you a short-term at least margin benefit in the second half of the year, or how should we think about that for the company overall?
Yeah, we have a small paper or rather a modest paper position, and there's no doubt the price of testliner has come down. That obviously affects paper, but it's obviously a very modest part of our business. And that does lead to some short-term margin expansion. I think we've been very clear with our shareholders that we're trying to really reduce the cyclicality, and that means reducing the trough, but also some of the spikes you may get in any one month in the past. We've also, that won't be the case, or certainly not to such a degree. So we probably do see some short-term slight improvement in the margins, but when we're looking at for the year as a whole, we don't expect there to be any substantial benefit. And it's quite interesting because the price of paper has fallen, but the price of old corrugated cases remains high, energy remains high, fuel remains high. So overall, there's still a bit of inflation coming through from other areas as well.
Right. Thanks for that. And then could you just compare and contrast maybe some of the trends you're seeing in the UK corrugated business versus the French corrugated business right now?
Yeah. The makeup of the businesses are slightly different in that we have more FMCG in France. And broadly, in the UK and France, in our FMCG business, they're both doing well. Retailers continue to demand more shelf-ready packaging from their suppliers. I think everybody recognises we've got an absolutely super position in this market. we really are seen as leading the whole development there. So in both the UK and France, it's going very well. Now the UK outside of that does have a slightly higher proportion than France in terms of industrial. It's about 30% of their business, whereas in France it's less than 20. And there's no doubt the industrial sector isn't developing at the same, isn't growing at anywhere near the same rate as the FMCG. So that does mean the growth in the UK is slightly below France. But I stress it's still a, in terms of our core FMCG business, it continues to develop. It really does. We're pleased with it.
But is industrial still flat to up slightly, or are you seeing negative trends on the side?
Yeah. I mean, on industrial, you know, we've got 3% overall volume. It's quite a bit stronger than that in FMCG, and industrial sort of 0 to 1. And it's been like that really for the last sort of quarter, really. But frankly, that's more or less where we expected it to be. Our outlook hasn't been for the industrial sector to show significant growth either this year or I have to say next year. But that was all in our 3% target, so it's trading pretty much as we expected. Great growth in FMCG and very consistent. You see the orders coming every day because the people don't stop eating and drinking, and it's great to see them.
And then, thanks, Miles. And then just lastly, Steve, I just had a couple of questions. Can you give us a sense of what you think run rate annual net finance costs are going to be post the Pfizer's divestiture once it's completed, and any thoughts on pension funding and costs going into next year?
Yeah, okay. I'll just take your run rate costs. Obviously, we'll put those funds on deposit. We're not looking to cancel or prepay any of our private placement borrowings because of the outlook in terms of acquisitions that we've talked about previously and Miles has just reiterated on the call. So effectively, we'll have the funds on deposit at 0.25%. So what's in your models now in terms of financing costs there still holds true. Obviously holding those funds there for reinvestment certainly for the next 12, 18 months. Now in terms of the, so that's where we are on in terms of the models. On pension costs, obviously in there, your model is most people have got in, I think we guided to a charge of about 3 million. In terms of how the accounting works, that's really run off the balance sheet. So you just need a model forward in terms of what you see the assets and liabilities. I think the interesting thing is you get into 2013-14, there's a change in accounting coming on pension costs, and there you're probably looking at an extra between 3 to 6 million of charge. Again, it's a finance charge related to pensions, it's non-cash. On the cash side, as you know, we reached agreement with the trustees on a 10-year recovery plan, of which we've pulled forward 1 year as a result of the Spices disposal. So there's the 10-year recovery plan goes to 9 years, but with 15 million going in against the Spices disposal proceeds.
Thanks very much.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Alexander from J.P. Morgan is now online with a question.
Oh, good morning, gentlemen. Just thinking about your sales mix, it's obviously a fairly dynamic thing, paper manufacturing becoming a considerably smaller part of what you do and your income. I was just looking at your previous targets for return on capital employed, 12-15% over the medium term. And the question was, to what extent is that predicated on further evolution of the sales mix, and to what extent will that be driven by further acquisitions?
Yeah, I mean the 12-15% is on our existing business. That's what we expect to make from it. And we're saying, you know, year in, year out, we should make returns in that range. And the reason that's so different from other people who we're sort of loosely associated with, but other companies that have very long paper positions, is that to keep that consistency, we really need quite a modest paper position. So it's on the existing business, but it is with a declining paper position to stop the to reduce the cyclicality. Now, when we look at acquisitions, we're not looking to dilute those returns. We're looking to consistently earn above our cost of capital from those investments. I think our cost of capital, this all pre-tax, is more around the 10% level, and therefore the acquisitions get in that 12 to 15% range. But that means that they in themselves will need to be short on paper and long in packaging.
And so to clarify, we won't see a situation where you don't have any paper manufacturing capability, but it will become quite a small part of what you do, and really the growth will be predicated on the FMCG side of the business.
Yeah, I mean, we see we said with our mix of business that we do need some paper, and that is and looking at the acquisition opportunities, we are looking, all of the ones we're looking at are short in paper. They do have some, but it's a very modest part. It's really that packaging, recycled packaging business that we're after, with the right level of paper to support that, which is actually quite a short paper, which is quite a short paper position. Principally because there's excess capacity in Europe, and that's what leads to that cyclicality of returns in paper. And there are a number of opportunities that that we're looking at, but we're very, very clear on where the growth will come from, and that's a continued use of corrugated, recycled packaging by the big FMCG companies, by industrial clients as well, continue switching to this much more sustainable source of packaging. That's where we see long-term good growth opportunities, and therefore good returns for our shareholders.
That's excellent. Thank you.
Excuse me, Dylan O'Neill from Goodbody Stockbrokers is now aligned with a question.
Hi guys, good morning. A few questions from me. First of all, on the corrugated pricing side, what are your expectations, given where, you know, we spoke about test center prices coming down, what are your expectations for corrugated pricing in the second half of the year?
I mean, test liner price of paper hasn't fallen hugely, but it has come off an all-time peak. It is still high, and we're actually still getting price increases coming through, although there's no doubt they're sort of tailing off now. That's price increases in our packaging coming through. So looking forward, I think if it continues at this level, there might be some small adjustment, but it's not tremendous. Really, what happens with paper, I mean, this is a problem. We just don't know.
Yeah.
And that's why we have such a short position in paper. And frankly, with our packaging business, if paper is high or low, we're still looking and are achieving the same profit for each square meter, each box that we sell. So it's high or low, we're not overly concerned about that, because the value add is what we're pricing on. So in terms of the outlook for test liner in the short term, I think it'll probably stay at or where it is. It may come off again very slightly. It's still very high, I have to say. The prices are still expensive, but really what happens after the next, after say 3 months, I mean, I just have no idea. Personally, I don't think it's going to fall very far, but we just don't know. We just don't know.
Okay. On the in terms of the negotiations with clients, both and this is contrasting the industrial versus the FMCG. Has there been a change in terms of the prices they're prepared to pay for corrugated?
No, I mean, if anything, what we're doing an awful lot of work with our customer base, understanding their requirements in much more detail. I mean, it's been absolutely fascinating. We've done a lot of work on the customer base with them, and there's a lot of improvement that is possible here. We're nowhere near the end of it, and there is a real appetite for great packaging. And that doesn't just mean the box, or just the printing, or just the colours and the ease of use. It's all about the supply chain, how it runs through their lines, how we deliver, the service, stock holding, the transport costs, etc. It's a really quite an exciting area, and it's an area that I think we are good at, but we can be much, much better than that. And that continues to drive value, and then it's back to how you price and how you charge for that. And again, that's an area which we have been doing a lot of work on, and I'm very encouraged by the progress that we're making. There's a bit of a bit of momentum building in the business behind a lot of the work that people are conducting.
Okay, very good. Just specifically in terms of the refinancing, what is the rate on the new facility?
Shall I tell you that, Miles?
Yeah, please, yeah.
Yeah. Well, obviously we don't actually disclose the specific rates, but put it this time, last time, and it's as ever, it's a ratchet link to net debt to EBITDA, I don't know, but if you think that last time it was less than 1.5, I think it was 120 basis points was the margin, and we are slightly better than that this time.
Okay, that's great. We
concluded that before some of the... I guess the banking turmoil that we're seeing in the market at the minute, so we feel as if we got in ahead of that in terms of the pricing starting to tighten up a bit.
Great stuff. Just one last question then. You know, we mentioned acquisitions. Has the expectation for pricing or multiples you have to pay changed recently based on the sort of turbulence and volatility we've seen in the market?
Steve, do you want to...
Yeah, at the end of the day, high quality businesses are always attract good valuations, Donald, and the lower ones don't. And I think people's expectations don't change. Probably some of the more loftier expectations people are realising, because I think some of the competition from outside of trade buyers is reduced in terms of private equity's ability to access low cost funding is certainly reduced. So it's probably it's a more balanced playing field for the trade buyers now.
Great. Okay, that's all for me, guys. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Excuse me, Harry Phil from Evolution is now on with a question.
Good morning, everyone. A couple of questions, please. Just more a little bit on the sort of FMCG performance. Elsewhere in Europe, you've highlighted France and the UK, Miles, but I was just wondering, is FMCG pretty consistent in each of the other regions, or is it higher or lower in some territories? And then secondly, in terms of the recycling rollout, if you could just sort of update there how that's going, please.
Yeah. The thing about the FMCG is that a lot of the customers that we are working more with on a pan-European basis, and in some ways we sort of slightly follow their growth, so actually if we go further east it gets stronger. Now we've got a very good position in countries like Poland, but they are just more modest in terms of the size of in terms of the overall size of the group, but we see very good progress there, and in Italy as well. So in the UK, France, Italy and Poland, which are our main markets, we have taken share in every market. And in our joint venture in Ukraine, that's also doing well in that economy. So, you know, I have to say, you know, we're pleased with the progress in France and UK. The economies aren't in the greatest of shapes. As you get to, and indeed in Italy as well, but as you go further east, it actually gets slightly stronger, I have to say. In terms of recycling, we see this as not only a great short-term play, but a fantastic medium and long-term position. Not only does it secure the fibre for us, and I think over the long term, ownership of the fibre will be a critical raw material, will be very important, but it gives us access to the retailer, and the retailer is our customer's customer. So one of our FMCG customers typically to sell to one of the big retailers, and this recycling allows us to work with the retailer, and we work in a completely different way to other refuse or waste collectors. We look to maximise the use of corrugated in the retailer. That takes cost out of the retailer's operation, and we also give them an income for the corrugated. And we're seeing that's really very exciting. That's probably, even in the UK, it's the highest growth business we have. It's doing extremely well. And the rollout into Europe, again, is going very well. We are collecting, I think I've said before, we've secured all of Tesco's business in Eastern Europe. We have now started all of the collections, and we are very pleased with how that's going. But it is early days. Now, there aren't huge volumes as we gear up, and the interest expressed from other retailers on the continent, we are very pleased with, although I can't sort of announce any other major deals at the moment. We are very encouraged by the reception that we're getting to our offering, which really is quite unique, and very pleased with the rollout with Tesco. So steady she goes, but just the great if it was an even larger part of our business.
Great stuff, many thanks.
Excuse me, Wayne Guy from Monastic is now in line with a question.
Morning, guys. Just four very quick questions. One for Steve. Can you just tell us what the covenants are on the new revolver?
Sure. They're exactly the same as the ones we previously disclosed, bar the interest cover covenant.
Mm-hmm.
And previously, it was profit divided by interest had to be greater than 3.
Yeah.
And now it's EBITDA divided by interest has to be greater than 4.5. Now, frankly, normally this never has an issue except, I guess, in your worst downside scenario where effectively being on an EBITDA basis gives a business such as ourselves greater headroom.
Right, okay. The other question is just on the plastics where you were saying that's had good good growth, volume growth. Can you give a bit more colour as to the two activities and which, you know, where the growth has come from?
Yeah. Plastics is primarily liquid packaging and display and dispensing, and this is around the plastic bags that you put liquids in. Mm-hmm. And then that bag goes in a corrugated box, and
so is that rather than the returnable crates that's driving the growth?
That's the major part of it.
Yeah.
And they're also taps and fitments. Where we've really been focusing there, I mean, we are getting, you know, we're getting very very strong demand there, and we see a long term significant growth opportunity here. As you know, we are opening a new factory at the moment in Thailand. Unfortunately, it's near Bangkok, but it is well above the water level. We did have a good look at that beforehand. But, you know, it's the demand for these bags that go into boxes, because it saves so much on transporting a box rather than a bottle or a sort of a drum, has been and remains very strong. And I think we're going to see continued good growth in that market. But again, you know, we're sort of tidying up the portfolio, doing a lot on the cost base, so we're seeing, you know, very nice profit growth.
Okay. Just two final quick questions. On the timing on the cost savings or the procurement savings coming through, what accelerated that? And has there been any change in the timing of general cost recoveries?
If I, Steve, you want to take the part on procurement, etc.
Yeah, it's really, as we say there, in terms of on procurement. If you think back to when we last spoke to you, Wayne, we were talking about 6 million.
Yeah, yeah.
There, we're looking to achieve 9 million.
Mm-hmm.
In this current financial year, it's coming across all the spend categories.
Okay, so it's a bit on everything. It isn't something.
Yeah, that's right. And
yeah.
It's if you think back to that organisation structure, you know, that we probably showed last December, it was very much individual businesses doing the best job they could to buy. We appointed an interim while we recruited a permanent chief procurement officer. He's now in place, and it's good procurement disciplines combined with aggregating spend across the whole group, combined with, in a sense, suppliers seeing the visibility of the size of their customer and the confidence in things like credit and that, and also it's a growing customer, mm-hmm. and then wanting to support us. So that's, you know, it's really those three things are driving the procurement benefit.
Okay. And in terms of the recovery of the input costs, Miles, is there anything of note to add there?
No, I mean, I have to say our recovery has been good, fully recovering the increases, raw material cost increases, and I have to say those, I think I said earlier, they continue to come through, but obviously with some softening in the cost of some raw materials. Mm-hmm. We expect those price increases, the rate of increase obviously starting to fall and will flatten off. But as I said, it's the value added that we're interested in, not base mm-hmm. price of some of our raw materials, because we're not integrated. Anything like the extent, again, it's quite a difference between us and other people. It's because we're not so integrated, paper is more of a pass-through for us.
Yeah.
So it's not so critical, these ups and these downs. That's why we're saying we don't get the same degree of cyclicality. We're a very paper short, fibre long, packaging long business, and shareholders are starting to see what that means for them in terms of profits, cash flow, and therefore dividends.
Okay, thanks. That's all I had.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touchtone phone. Ross Gallardi from Merrill Lynch is back in line with a question. Thank you.
Yeah, hi, I just had a quick follow-up. I was just curious, what impact is this very heavy promotional environment that we're hearing about, you know, from the UK retailers, having on box demand and also their willingness, well, if not their willingness to pay for a more value added box, it's their supplier's willingness, but hopefully you know what I mean, if you could just comment on that.
Absolutely, Ross, and it's a great, great question. Promotion activity is extremely high. It's been increasing quarter on quarter pretty much for the last 2.5-3 years, and even if you go over a 5-year period, it's just becoming much more of a feature of the retail environment. And I don't think it's just about recession. I think this is about consumers being less influenced by advertising and far more influenced at the point of sale, price, position, the product, the presentation. You know, the typical all the P's in sort of a marketing strategy, price, promotion, promotion, etc. It's just becoming more important, and we like that, because what it means is when you go on promotion, you're never sure about the demand. It means it's got to be a more flexible supply chain. Therefore, your interaction with the FMCG customers' supply chain is critical. And as we know, you haven't got a box to put it in, you can't supply. So it really does tie us close, and we like that. It gives us a chance to show we have the best service in the industry. I mean, we're leading that in terms of on time in full. We survey our customers and they're telling us that. So we're seeing it, promotion activity increase. I think it's going to go on for a long time to come, and that's good news for us in terms of our relationship and the value we can demonstrate to our customers. And the second part to your question, you know, these are world-class organisations. We're talking Procter, Reckitt, Kraft, Danone. You know, they are world-class, and they're world-class in terms of procurement. And if they don't think you're adding value, it's not a question of price. They're just not going to work with you. Even when you do work with you, they are going to be very demanding on value and only pay for what they think is the value you provide. And so it's tough, but it's tough for everybody. Everybody supplies. So if you're good, then you've got a, then you can make a return that's in line with the value that you add. And that's a position I'm very, very comfortable with. It's tough, it's difficult, but this is Europe and that's the economy. And DS Smith is in a very, very good position to match their requirements. But there's a lot more for us to do. We are not where we need to be. If you look at our marketing plans, you look at how we tie innovation through to marketing, through to sales plans linked into the customer, we are years behind where the FMCG guys are. But we're doing a lot of work there, and we're going to get better. I think we're very good compared to the rest of the industry, but frankly, without being too derogatory, it's not a benchmark you want to use. It's our customers. They're the benchmark, and that's what we're aiming towards. So it is demanding. Prices are always competitive, but I'm not uncomfortable with that. It all depends on us getting better, and we're getting some momentum there.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you. We have no further questions at this time, gentlemen.
Well, look, thank you very much, everybody, for dialing in this morning and listening to our pre-close. As I said, you know, trading, there's positive momentum in it. It's continued with the 3% volumes coming through right up to the current time. And as well as the positive sales growth, it's been good in terms of margins and cash flow. Cash flow from looking at the working capital, etc., margins from getting the pricing right, then all the efficiencies coming through as well. Otor, the business in France, just made an excellent contribution again, illustrating the sort of opportunity there is for DS Smith in this fragmented packaging market. And for this half year, we are expected to show considerable EPS growth on the comparable period last year. And looking at what we have talked through and the progress we are making towards our medium-term financial objectives, it shouldn't come as any surprise that we, you know, notwithstanding the current economic environment, that we remain confident in the outlook for the year. Thank you very much, everybody, again for your time.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.